Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where we explore the transformative journey of reentry after incarceration. I'm your host, Venkivia Gardner. Each week, we bring you powerful interviews with experts in the field and the voices of those who have lived through the experience. Our mission is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal stories by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals. We explore the latest research, policies, and practices while also hearing firsthand accounts from those who've been impacted. Join us as we uncover the realities of reentry, challenge misconceptions, and inspire hope. Whether you're a professional working in the legal system, a family member, an advocate, or someone navigating reentry yourself, More Life the Reentry Podcast is here to inform, inspire, and ignite change. Welcome back to another episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where in this season, we've been exploring the entrepreneurial journey of those who have been impacted by the legal system. If you didn't get the chance to, make sure you take a listen to our last week's episode. In last week's episode, we answered the essential question of whether entrepreneurship is an option for people who are formerly incarcerated or have a criminal record. In today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about the unique barriers that these individuals may encounter when they attempt to enter or try to enter the world of business. We'll be discussing some key challenges such as stigma, limited access to funding, but also talking about what are next steps in supporting those in addressing these particular barriers. Joining us today will be Drs. Robinson and Dr. Fernhaber. Dr. Fernhaber is a professor of entrepreneurship and innovation, where she teaches courses including social entrepreneurship and the entrepreneurial mindset. She specifically examines international entrepreneurship, grassroots innovation, and societal grand challenges, with a particular focus on how ventures adapt to institutional and social constraints to create impact. More recently, she's been doing research looking at how individuals facing adversity, so including those that are justice impacted, develop entrepreneurial skills and navigate those systemic barriers. Dr. Robinson is an assistant professor of innovation and entrepreneurship. Well, she explores how entrepreneurs navigate uncertainty through creativity, coaching, and emerging technologies. Her research specifically focuses on creative entrepreneurship, the impact of AI on entrepreneurial decision-making, and the role of entrepreneurship in post-prison reintegration. I thank you both for joining us today, and welcome to our show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So before we get into our actual conversation for today, I do want to just extend a question to you all, because last week we did talk about entrepreneurship as a pathway for people who are coming out of the carceral system. Can each of you share with us on why you think entrepreneurship is an important option for these individuals when they're being released from incarceration?
Yeah, I can start here. I think one of the reasons why entrepreneurship is a path following incarceration is because sometimes there isn't another option. We spoke with several individuals who had even gotten a job that they really liked, that they could use their skill sets, and then once they did the background check, they were let go. So entrepreneurship serves as an option, sometimes out of necessity, not always something that was kind of first at mind. Some cases it is. There's a lot of reasons, but I think that is one of them. And we found some statistics that individuals that are formerly incarcerated are 45% more likely to start a business than those without a criminal record. So that kind of shows you where they tend to have options, even if it, again, isn't their first choice.
I would add to that, there's a philosophy out there that anyone can be an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship is a learnable skill. It's something that we can develop habits, we can develop knowledge, we can develop skills along the way to become more entrepreneurial. But even though entrepreneurship tends to be kind of in this field of almost like hero worshiping of who we think is an entrepreneur, and we go to that sort of Silicon Valley metaphor, the reality is there's lots of individuals practicing entrepreneurship every day in unconventional ways. And our reentry community is just one of those demographics.
Absolutely. I know you said that you all did some work and did some interviews. Can you share with us some of the gains that people have shared that entrepreneurship has brought to them or their lives?
Yeah, I think that there's a variety of things that where entrepreneurship has brought to their lives, right? I think it's a source of creativity and agency where they can kind of control their future versus so many things that are perhaps not in their control. So we've noticed that. We've also noticed that entrepreneurship in some cases can be a platform for giving back. So I think we were kind of surprised and inspired by so many of the individuals that we talked to that had either, you know, incorporated a nonprofit angle or have desires to be able to do so. So yeah, there's lots of, I think, positive elements on it, and just being a source of provision, and that they are figuring it out, that can be a sense of hope for them as well.
Yeah, building on that, there is a lot of them sort of talked about this idea of becoming a role model, and especially becoming a role model after going through so much stigma, a role model for their kids, a role model for other people going through this, where they see just how that persistence kind of pays off. Another thing they sort of highlighted in the interviews was that getting involved in the entrepreneurship community was a really great way to meet different people that maybe they never would have met before. They wouldn't have seen themselves as part of that club. One of our folks said, you know, these are people that I guess I would have been too timid to engage or too ashamed to have a conversation with. And so they need to sort of acknowledge that they're now part of something larger and they've left that other life behind.
Yeah, so it really does offer not just financial independence and personal fulfillment in a way, but there's some opportunities of community. There's some opportunities of purpose. And so it really makes it a great option for people when their options are often so limited, is what I'm hearing.
I think just to add to that, I mean, just looking at another quote here, it says, you start paying your bills and you have your own time, and it's something you're doing and your rent is paid. I mean, entrepreneurship can be as simple as that. It's just getting life done, and it's having some mechanism to do that and check the boxes of life in a way that's satisfying and rewarding.
So I know there are definitely some positives to becoming an entrepreneur. But we also know that people who are formerly incarcerated or that have a criminal record may encounter more challenges than someone who does not, and that is an entrepreneur. Can you talk to us a little bit about what some of those challenges may be?
Yeah, some of the challenges are more obvious, but they have a lot more depth to them. And some of them, I think I wasn't that aware of. But I think the first one that comes to mind is stigma. This notion of they're being publicly scrutinized, right? That their background is out there for the public to see. And in that case, they sometimes face different responses. We had one individual that we had interviewed. She had shared, "I'm an addict. I'm a thief. I'm this. I'm that. I'm always going to be that. I'm never going to change." And those were the messages that she was hearing from people as they were kind of making assumptions about her. So I think this notion of stigma, when you're trying to run a business, it can be a challenge, right? Because it isn't that you are running it without any other barriers. So whether that impacts, you know, the ability to get financing, the ability of people to work with you, or, you know, just this initial reaction of, oh, do I want to, you know, work with this entrepreneur? So I think that one was a heavy one, I think, that was laying over everyone in our conversations. Fiona, what would you add to that?
I would add, you know, one word that Stephanie and I keep tripping over is this word intertwinement, which is the intertwinement of their personal life and their entrepreneurial life. And often when we think of the journey of an entrepreneur, it has particular milestones. And we add on to this a lot of the systemic layers, like, yes, I'm trying to start a business, but I'm also trying to find housing. And I might be trying to find a job, and I might be trying to figure out where my kids are and how I can get them back. So there's this huge aspect of trying to like figure out two things at once, and they're both like wholly substantial, you know, trying to get your life restarted at the same time that, you know, most people would think that it's novel or adventurous enough to start a business, let alone that while you may not be sure where you're going to sleep the next night.
And an example of that, you know, I remember one of the individuals said that they think the biggest roadblock of all, believe it or not, he said, is the system. And you think that once people leave prison, right, if they've served their time, they move on, but it isn't necessarily the case. You know, some of them might have an ankle bracelet, some of them might have to have check-ins with their probation officer, and all of that kind of, and they have to pay back restitution, and all of these things are sometimes, you know, seems insurmountable. Again, at the same time, they're trying to get their life back on track, and they're able to trying to, you know, pursue this business venture to be able to provide an income. They're also dealing with these kind of system level issues that just has to be part of the, you know, the reentry process.
And if we could just add one more thing to that, is if we consider the aspect of time and time management and how it's allocated in a prison environment, you know, you're told what to do, when to do it, when to go for lunch, when you have free time, etc. Nobody is telling you when to take your kids to school and when to register the business license and when to start doing marketing and when to pick the kids up again and everything else. So they go from this very structured environment to this life that is a lot more task-oriented. And now they're the ones that have to structure all that time and figure out how to get everything done.
Yeah, it definitely does make the experience more complicated than a person who is just starting a business and does not have this particular context in their life. I also often think about, I know so many people, and I'm sure even with some of our listeners may have had similar experiences or know someone that has. Many people, when they leave the system, depending on how long they've been incarcerated, they don't even have a credit score or very limited employment history. Some have none, no savings or compensation at the time. So adding that on to the systemic stuff that they're already trying to get through and create opportunity for themselves, it really does make it a lot more complex and difficult to navigate.
Yeah, you know, this notion of not having a credit history, that's like a small piece of it. But they also said, what, I've been, you know, 20 years, you know, a blank on your resume. What have you been doing the last 20 years? And that's where you've been. You know, that kind of couples with it on how do you get funding, right? How do you find access to capital? And I think that the answer is, unless you have, you know, a network or friends or family out there that are able to support you, most of them don't. And so for that reason, they have to, when they think about entrepreneurship, they have to think about really low cost business models, things that they can do with maybe they're service oriented, or they can get a lawnmower, right? So it's going to go in the landscaping industry. Something that doesn't require very much, because it just isn't an option, or very limited option.
Yeah, I did an episode sometime last year where we talked about the type of employment that many people who have a criminal record have to take on, or even the type of jobs that they do pursue. Entrepreneurship, they are low wage jobs. So it may be landscaping, because they just don't have access to the funding opportunities that others may have due to them having a criminal record.
If I could add a little bit onto what Stephanie said too about, you know, that what have you been doing for 20 years, you know, when it really has had a large gap, you just consider how fast everything moves technologically in society, right? So it could be that in the last 20 plus years, they haven't used an ATM machine before. Or they're not maybe transferring money in the way that we're familiar with now. Social media, what's that? You know, how did it move? What's this new platform? What's AI? You know, how do I get involved with this? So all these additional skills that they have to pick up in their lapse of time, while, you know, in prison they had limited internet connection and maybe a tablet or something, but not much more than that, just presents a huge knowledge gap for them as well.
And you think this would be like really depressing, right? Because it is so hard. But I can't, you know, when we did these interviews, I walked away from each one inspired, because I thought, wow, they have all these challenges, all these roadblocks, more so than any traditional entrepreneur. But yet they're able to do it. And they're even, I mean, we talked to an entrepreneur that was in the social media industry, right? After being, you know, locked up for so long, to be able to embrace it. So I think it says something about these individuals, their perseverance, their creativity, their willingness to learn and to shift, to maybe start in a the easiest, lowest cost business that they can, but then see an opportunity and shift into that. So, and even their desire to incorporate the social impact or a way to give back. So I'll say that the challenges, they're really dire. They really, really are. But this is a special group of individuals, and you know, you just have to applaud their willingness to and their ability just to keep on going.
Yeah, I know in reading you all's article, one thing that I was reading was figuring it out becomes mm-hmm. a mantra. And so that brings me to the question of how did you see these individuals addressing these barriers, stigma, capital, funding? How were they going about addressing those for themselves?
Figuring it out. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that got us curious about this research to begin with was thinking about how different adaptations that were made in prison life may possibly help them on the outside as entrepreneurs. So in that experience, they've developed kind of a unique set of skill sets as well, maybe some things that are helpful to them. Like, what is it like to live in with scarce resources, you know, to literally live in the size of a bathroom for 20 years? You know, how does that help you on the outside when, you know, everyone else is complaining that they can't get the $20,000 business loan, but that's not your problem. You're like, hey, if I could just get a few $100 going, I could buy this t-shirt press or something, right? So that actually becomes an opportunity or something that they can take advantage of. What were some of the other ones, Stephanie?
Well, I was just thinking about one of the individuals that we interviewed who, you know, said, I just take this mindset, right? I just have to figure it out. But, you know, the ones that we saw how they figured it out is that they didn't always figure it out alone. And so many of these individuals had, I mean, it was a mindset. So there's like this internal piece where they have to decide to persevere, to focus on it, to get back into a routine. But there's also surrounding themselves with individuals. So whether that be a supportive community, whether that be a faith community, whether that be someone that had an entrepreneurship facilitator that had come into the, you know, the prison system and they followed up with them, right? As soon as they got out. So whether it be a network that they are curating for themselves that's either personal support, because not all of them have, you know, this like family situation that they can go back to either. So it's curating new forms of social support as well as this kind of business support. And as well as, in some cases, seeking out peers, right? Individuals that have been in this situation before, because that's another source of support for them. So I think when they figure it out, yes, it's this individual, this mindset that they have to do it, and they do have the skill sets to be able to do it. But the ones at least that we've talked to are not doing it completely alone. They might feel like that, but they mention, you know, these people that are in their lives that make a difference.
They also talked about being incarcerated as a time for reflection and a time for reading, or, you know, really figuring out what they wanted to do. And a lot of them talked about reading these business books, because whereas the internet is, you know, off limits, books are readily available. And so they would take to books about real estate, about entrepreneurship, you know, books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and how to get going in life, and probably spend a lot more time investing in those books than, say, you know, the everyday student, right? Because they've got the time and they've got the ambition, and they want to turn things around.
There's this one, I have to do it to be able to survive, and to be able to maintain, and to live a life that's, you know, successful for me. But there's also another component of like mentorship and networking and kind of curating a social support system that is going to help you throughout this process.
And what they mentioned was sort of the invaluableness of that, like finding that one person or two people or that critical agency, but also that it wasn't always easy to do. You know, even if they were out there, they didn't, because, you know, one of the aspects of the prison environment is you don't have the social connections, you have the sort of disconnectedness, right? And so even on the outside, you're lucky if you can make that phone call to that person and do it in a relatively efficient manner. So even though they're very receptive to mentorship and they would like to find peers on the outside, it's not always easy to do that. And that's where I think even, you know, media such as your podcast is really helpful, is being able to sort of tell the story of people who have been through an experience like them and have been able to have, you know, see some of the different ways that people have had success with that.
One of the pieces that we've been exploring beyond the paper that we've shared with you that we published us for is how these individuals maintain a level of hope, because it's hard, right? This is really a dire situation. It can be easy to spiral downward, but how do they maintain this level of hope? And but it's been kind of fascinating to think about, because hope theory, and you, Vancouver, you're probably more familiar with this than us, but really requires agency thinking or this kind of willpower, as well as pathways or way power thinking. So being able to be inspired and to know that they want to do it and to maintain that, but also being able to get around barriers and know that if I can, I can call somebody, I'll figure it out. So that's where that figuring it out comes in. And again, with hope, we find that the hope is sparked, yes, by some of their internal experiences and their internal mindset, but also the people that are around them. So I think that's been kind of a fascinating piece to think about, just how do they maintain that level of hope given, you know, the challenges.
Absolutely. I will say one of the things I really appreciate about this conversation is just the nuances of what we're talking about. I think when we talk about barriers, it's very easy for us to pull up, oh, they may not have access to capital, or licensing, like those things we know, but we really don't think about these other things that come into play that they also are trying to navigate, of just how do I adjust to the world outside when I've been locked or incarcerated somewhere and I haven't had the same level of socialization, a world that doesn't have the same, that same structure of which I'm used to, and still try to navigate all of these different things. It's a lot more complicated than what we think it is, which I imagine makes it a lot more stressful for these individuals.
Absolutely. And I'm just looking at one of the quotes here from one of the individuals we interviewed that said, acknowledge, I'm pulling this off. I'm really pulling this off. And that's worthy. Sometimes we have to step outside the picture and give ourselves applause. So that's, it is. So it's the moments of, it's, this is hard, but, you know, breathing, we're doing it. We keep on trying, persevering.
Yeah. So perseverance, tenacity, those become really important skills, traits, for a person to have to be able to really push through, and, you know, create an opportunity for themselves, because it's not easy, and oftentimes there's some people don't have support.
I think that was one thing that kind of surprised us as researchers and even as entrepreneurship educators, is that often when you look at a, you know, an entrepreneurship course, it's like, you have to solve a problem. You have to have a business idea. You have to have a target market. You have to have a marketing plan. You know, you have to go talk to people and validate your idea. And so when you sort of talk about these nuances, you know, what we came around to doing is that our first sort of research was, as you read, on empathy, is how do we actually deeper understand the problem and go forward with it? And then, you know, going further even from sort of the tactical stuff is like exploring this idea of hope and how do we cultivate hope? And those tend to be the skills that are almost more needed than, you know, how to exploit some sort of business idea.
Yeah, I think that would be a big piece. And it's very specific to, well, I'm not going to say specific, because I mean, I imagine hope for any entrepreneur is what is needed. But when we're talking about people who are formerly incarcerated, who often feel like they don't have a lot of hope, it's really important to instill that hope.
One of the interesting takeaways from, I think, our research and this whole conversation is, what do we do about this? And a lot of what we've talked about thus far is all about the individual, right, that was previously incarcerated and they're kind of starting this entrepreneurial journey. And a lot of it is on him or her, right, that it is. But there's also a lot on others as well. And one that I think is especially pertinent are, I would put them in this category of entrepreneurial support organizations. So we have, you know, co-working spaces, entrepreneurial incubators, we have all these kind of support structures out there. And what I think that they can learn from this is how do we kind of be more inclusive to offer, you know, how can we offer ways not just for space and for figuring out a business model, but how can we offer ways to cultivate hope? And what might that look like? Maybe it's sharing inspirational stories or setting up opportunities for certain groups to kind of network or to find people in their network that are like them. Or what does it look like to help with on the financing end? We know this is an issue, but how can entrepreneurial support organizations kind of come together to support, whether it be low-cost entry entrepreneurial endeavors and or figuring out how do we find capital, right, to support individuals because we know that they're going to have a challenge in doing so. So, I don't know, I get excited there just thinking about how can we rethink these entrepreneurial support organizations to support the individual in their personal life, their housing, all these needs at the same time, instead of separating them, which I think is the traditional approach that we see in the entrepreneurial world, kind of going over this conventional entrepreneur versus what we would call maybe the unconventional, not necessarily even unconventional, but the ones that aren't as visible, right, in where we're heading.
Not just that they're not as visible, but they're often not as novel. So as we talk about landscaping businesses, t-shirt presses, social media businesses, sometimes they don't always have that sort of press novelty. And so some aspect of what captures people's attention is the story, or bringing the story forward, or the story of possibility.
That was going to be one of my questions for you all, is how do we continue to foster or work towards fostering of inclusivity and accessibility of entrepreneurship for formerly incarcerated? I know you've highlighted two ways for us. Are there other ways in which us as individuals, organizations, or even at the broader level, policy level, of which we could do this?
Gosh, so many. But I think, I don't know if we necessarily have the answers or if we can ask the, I think we're posing the questions to get people to think about this. So like a question that we ask in our research is how might we reduce stigma towards individuals who start a business upon reentry? And we can think about that at so many levels because stigma is something that society produces, right? So that's on everyone. That isn't just on the individuals or just on policymakers. That's on us all. And, you know, how might we reduce it? I don't know. It could be just by awareness or like a podcast like this. I applaud you, Vankivia, for producing it because it is a way to maybe share some empathy to be able to let people understand and kind of reduce their assumptions. So there's on society as a whole, just on that question, and how might policy reduce stigma? Maybe it does have to do with, you know, background checks or whatnot. I'm not sure, but the people in policy need to kind of ask themselves this question, and even, you know, the entrepreneurial support organizations or me and you, what can we do? So I like the idea of posing these questions and that each kind of group can think through this, you know, how might we answer this and how might we collectively come up with the solutions? Because I think they're out there and I think people know, but they just need to be able to empathize. They need to be able to understand these individuals, their journey and where they're coming from, understand what the challenges are, and then kind of use each of our kind of expertise and background to come up with ways to collectively solve it.
Absolutely. And just the mere posing of the questions and conversations we're talking about here is important, because I don't think we're going to come up with all the answers here today. If we did, great. But I just don't think that that's going to happen. But we can inspire people to spout these questions. And
even if we want to look at it from an entirely practical standpoint, I mean, recidivism is a huge cost. Keeping people imprisoned is a huge cost. Why not have policies that instead, you know, stimulate, you know, have economic stimulation built in of people who want to sort of create new things in the economy? So even if we do take our heart off our sleeves and, you know, really look at it from a practical standpoint, I think there's some good motivation for policy there.
And you know, policy, and I'm not an expert in this area, but it can stem from the sentencing to begin with. I know we've been exposed to a lot of policy on sentencing youth that are sentenced as adults, right? And the implications for those folks. And I don't have the answers, but it kind of makes us think from the very sentencing aspect, even pre that, right? What, how did these kids, right, get there in the first place, right? So we can go down as deep as we want to in that process to be able to answer these questions, like how do we stop, you know, kids from getting there in the first place? Then do we, you know, policy around the sentencing, the whole situation when we're in prison, the reentry process, right? I know an individual that got out a few weeks ago, and it's about a month and a half, and you know, he was released without a birth certificate or a social security card. How can you get a job without those? And those take time. So I mean, it's taking him months to be able to get those things. So the reentry process, as well as the corporations and the hiring process and the entrepreneurial support. So I don't know, I think it's neat to be able to look at it through that whole, the whole journey, and what can each of us do to kind of help shape and answer these.
Absolutely. Because it really is a journey. And it is something, I like what you said earlier, Dr. Robinson, of it's all intertwined, and we really can't look at these things separately or independently. This is a big context of their life, and so it's important that we look at it all together and figure out how we can help them at each phase, and as they continue on to their journey, even after they reach a point to where they define themselves as successful or thriving. How do we continue to show up and support? So I want to ask you all, because I know you both have experience in entrepreneurship and innovation. For those of our audience listeners or individuals that have a criminal record, have been formally incarcerated, or whatever their context is of being legally involved, if they want to start a business but are feeling a little discouraged, what advice would you provide for them at this time?
That's a huge question. really, when you're coming at it from this standpoint, you know, it's really keep all your options open. I mean, you might be filling out job applications and doing step one of starting a business. In my own personal experience and what I've seen, probably the best thing you can do is get a sale. Just figure out something you can offer and something that someone else is going to pay for, right? There's your first learning. You know, that can happen before you run down to the center and go get a business license, you know, the typical step one. You know, just see what you can do that is marketable and potentially appreciated. Yeah, that's where the real sort of entrepreneurial learning begins. And then based on that, get some feedback, see how it went. Do you want to do that again? Do you want to sell that thing again? Or is there something you can modify or alter? Is there a different way you might do it? But really, I think when you're in those early phases, it's just, you know, you're not looking at an open door. You're looking at multiple doors and seeing which one of these doors is going to open and how. And if it does open, how do I exploit that, or how do I go through that door? Because it could be that you start to get your landscaping business going, and then lo and behold, some sort of period of employment shows up. And then maybe it's taken away, so you have to go back to step two of your business. So you've got this sort of back and forth in terms of, you know, your number one objective, which is to develop some sort of income, right? And just really pay the rent, you know, put food on the table and focus on those really important things.
Yeah, and I guess a reframe of the question too, how can we instill hope? I know we've talked about that quite a bit throughout this conversation, but how can we instill hope, or what advice would you give?
You know, at the end of each of our interviews, we had asked the people we were interviewing, you know, what advice would they give, you know, to others. I wish I had it in front of me. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm trying to think of a few things that I remember. And I know one was just keep your foundation. And so one said, get yourself back into a routine and make sure you find time to like learn and just to breathe, right? So I know some of them would get back up early in the morning and they would keep on a routine and they would, and that was helping them. I know another had shared just, you know, having the practices, right? This mindful practice of just breathing, right? Like when you get stressed out, just remember what you do, right? And so there, some of the pieces of advice were kind of just this, remember who you are, because you had this kind of, when you're a lot of them share, and I'm sure this is not everyone, but when they were leaving, they had a solid sense of who they were. And then you get out into the world and it's just chaotic and all these people and you kind of get overwhelmed. And so they were just like, maintain who you are, right? Like find that solid practice. And the peers. But then to answer kind of your reframed question, Ben, Kivia, about how do we install hope? I don't think we can install it, but how can they, we can reach out, right? We can, each of us, if we know somebody that's in that situation, we can reach out. We can try to be part of their network because it goes both ways, right? If they're looking for people, because I really think it's surrounding yourself with people and community and, you know, these in the support systems, which is going to help install that hope, because it's hard to do it yourself. So, and if you can't do that, listen to podcasts like this, listen to stories, surround yourself by positive messages, because that's going to be something that can keep you going and can help you keep learning.
Yes. Great points, all of those. So I really hope that, you know, our audience is been able to really take something from our conversation today and learn a lot about the multiple layers of challenges that our people face when they're leaving the system and seeking to build a business. I do want to ask before we get off of here and wrap up our conversation, is there anything that you feel like that maybe we missed out on and we didn't discuss that is important for our audience to know or to just keep in mind as either they're learning about barriers to entrepreneurship or experiencing them on their own?
We may have touched on this, but I would just say, you know, start small, you know, find the one idea, the one sale, as I said before, find the one person, you know, that can kind of connect to you and really leverage that for what it's worth. See what you can learn and learn from that. Because it's not the business plan or the grand vision that's going to get you anywhere. It's that slow sort of incremental building of just going one step at a time that's probably, you know, going to get some of these ventures launched more successfully in the early stages.
I think I would just end with, I think something, thank you, that you had mentioned either when we were prepping for this or earlier on, just about the humanization of people. Like, these are real people. These are my family. These are your family, right? These are our friends, and you get to know them. They are our community. They are our neighbors. And I think if we kind of take that kind of a mindset of they're not a statistic, right? They are real people. And I think that goes a long way. So I think, and they're not just real people. They're pretty amazing people, right? Like, these are pretty, you know, smart, clever, you know, creative, amazing people. So that's been my joy in, you know, this whole process.
Well, look, I really do appreciate you both coming on to just share your experience and the work that you have done. Like I said, today's conversation really has been an eye-opener and just really being able to discuss the nuances of not just reintegrating back into society, but trying to start a business and maintain a business. And we've talked about stigma. We've talked about limited capital and how that can be overwhelming. But we've also talked about how people can cultivate support and resources that can help them overcome these barriers. So I really do appreciate you both for joining me. And I hope our audience really takes something from here and shares it with other people or with someone that they know that may be trying to start a business.
Thanks for having us. It's been great.
Yes, thank you, Vancavia, for bringing this topic into more of the public, which is what we all want.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you all. Struggling with barriers? Don't let the obstacles hold you back. Explore the legal resources, advocacy groups, and skill-building workshops listed in the episode description. Take action to remove one barrier at a time and get closer to building your dream business. Thank you for listening to this episode on More Life, the Reentry Podcast. Be sure to come back next week to learn more. Before we end today, I want to give a huge thank you to the More Life, the Reentry Podcast team in helping with the development and production of this episode. Thank you. If you are interested in joining our team, please fill out the form in the description box. If you want to share your story, please fill out the form in the description box. We thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week.